You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The latest film from Mike Leigh is called Happy Go Lucky, and it stars Sally Hawkins in a stunning performance as Poppy, a chirpy, relentlessly positive school teacher in London. It earned her the Best Actress Prize at this year's Berlin Film Festival. Happy Go Lucky opens today at the Landmark Sunshine in Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mike Leigh back to the show today. Hello.
Hello. It's really good to be here again.
What was your original idea when you began work on Happy Go Lucky? Did you have any idea it would turn out the way it has?
Well, I mean, you know, the truth is, I have to report I had more of a feeling than an idea as such. Just a kind of sense of the spirit of the thing. And really, I don't think I'd have been able to articulate that very usefully at the time. I just had a sense of it and embarked on doing what, as you know, and we've talked about it lots in the past, what I always do, which is to discover what the film is by going on the journey of making it, really. Having made it, I realised that one of the things that I was kind of instinctively groping towards, and I think what we've actually done, is to make what I call an anti-miserabilist film. Really. You know, we really are making a mess of the world, and I think there's a great deal to be gloomy about, but there are people out there rolling up their sleeves and getting on with it, not least amongst whom are teachers like Poppy. You know.
Well, some of your previous work can be described as rather dark, like Naked and Secrets and Lies and Vera Drake. So in this case, you felt like doing something a little less gloomy. There is a dark side.
Well, there is a dark side, and there's also warmth and joy in those other films, in Secrets and Lies and certainly Vera Drake. Apart from anything else, every time I invite you round for supper, I don't want to serve up the same dish. You know? Uh-huh. I mean, it is the job of saying, okay, well, where shall I go now that's different? And actually, if you think about Naked in relation to High Hopes and Secret and Life is Sweet that preceded it, or Secrets and Lies in relation to it, or Topsy Turvy, which had a slight
dark side, but it was really a very happy film.
Well, also just different. I mean, Jean Renoir, you know, said we all filmmakers make the same film every time you make a film, and that's true as well. But I just sort of wanted to do something different. And also the other thing is that I absolutely, definitely, part of the project was to do a film with Sally Hawkins at the helm, because she was in both my previous films, All or Nothing and Vera Drake.
But playing very different kinds of characters.
Absolutely.
Did you know that this a reflection of her personality, or did you know that she could pull something like this
off?
Well,
I know she can do anything, because apart from the work she's done with me, she's been in all kinds of other films, and she's extraordinarily versatile. But she does have this incredibly positive energy and this great humour and wit, and, you know, she's just a kind of a positive personality, and so I wanted to tap into that and to work with her to create a character that would lift us, really.
Did you know that from the start that this would really be more about character than plot?
Well, I think one could say that about all of my films, and I don't actually think it isn't about plot. I mean,
things happen, about the way her interacting with a number of different people.
It's true. I mean, look, there are causal narratives and cumulative narratives. And I've dealt over the years with both. I mean, obviously, Vera Drake, in a way, is a completely causal story. I mean, this happens, therefore that happens. Mm-hmm. But even in this film, that is the case. I mean, there are a whole lot of things that happen because other things happen. So I'm not, to be honest with you, I'm not really too worried about plot versus character. I think both are important.
Well, you've said that there are similarities between Poppy and Vera Drake. Vera Drake performed illegal abortions in the 50s, and Poppy is a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah, but both of them are women that are concerned to do things for other people. They're warm. They have humour. They're positive. But that's all. I mean, I was merely making that comparison.
And a number of people I know who've seen it have wondered about what underlies Poppy's optimistic worldview and her exceedingly bubbly personality, to the point at times of it being almost annoying. Have you had any comments from people who watch the film waiting for the other shoe to drop?
I have. I mean, the thing that confuses me and leaves me baffled is people who say, I just couldn't stand her and I wanted to strangle her. I mean, I don't get it.
Trying so hard to please people to the point where sometimes she says even inappropriate things.
Well, I don't think that's true. I think she's very focused. She's very sensible. She's very together. She's very responsible. I mean, she's a really responsible teacher. She's a proper person and a grown-up and a citizen. But she's got a great sense of humour. She's got a great joie de vivre. She's got a streak of anarchy. I mean, certainly when she's confronted by somebody, as in the driving instructor whom she meets, who gives her lessons or doesn't give her lessons, depending on how you look at it. I mean, here is a guy who is clinically devoid of a sense of humour. And like all of us who have a highly developed sense of humour, you meet somebody with no sense of humour, it sort of brings out the worst in you. But she's not really, I mean, the idea that, as you said at the beginning, she is relentlessly cheerful, I don't really agree with. People who feel that in some way she's compensating for something or she's hiding something or it's kind of, it just isn't true. I mean, she just is absolutely positive, and you know, she's one of those people of whom there are many.
Well, we have a little clip from the driving lesson. By the way, the actor who plays the driving instructor is just extraordinary. Eddie Marsan. Had you worked with him before?
Yeah, he's the guy next door in Vera Drake who marries the daughter, the guy who makes that wonderful comment on Christmas Day.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of a driving lesson from this film.
Okay, check your mirrors.
Yeah, checking.
Okay, indicator, knock on the door, let them know you want to come in.
Ding dong.
Knock on the door, okay. Put your foot down on the clutch, put it in first gear. Okay, find your biting point just before you go. Okay, stop.
What?
Put the car in neutral, put the handbrake on, take your hand off the steering wheel, your foot off the pedal and turn off the ignition.
I haven't even started
I don't
yet.
Care, I've stopped. Now you tell me why I've stopped.
Got a headache?
No, yes, I have got a headache, and you tell me why I've got a headache.
I don't know, time of the month? Oh, give me a clue.
Well, think. Top to toe. Boots, Poppy. Boots.
Here we go.
Every week, I ask you, please wear appropriate footwear.
Yeah.
And every week, you insist on wearing those stupid boots.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You know what this is? This is vanity before safety.
All right.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Jones. I'm sorry. Poppy killed your child, but don't worry. She looked really cool in her sexy, seductive boots.
Like keeping you awake at night school?
No.
Are you sure about that? Shall we get on with the lesson, then? Yeah.
Are you going to do something about your boots?
No, I don't think so. They're fine. I'm cut for your knees. A lot of people drive in heels.
Very well. On your head, be it.
Yeah, okie dokie.
Sally Hawkins and Eddie Marsan in a scene from this new film by Mike Lee called Happy Go Lucky, a film which has teaching as a theme. She's a teacher. She's taking driving lessons. She takes flamenco lessons.
She does.
I mean, is that something that grew up in that process that we've talked about? And we'll probably have to go into it again, of how you develop a film.
Sure. But, you know, it is, as a education has played a part in my life, my children's lives. I'm involved with the education of young filmmakers, something that preoccupies me. And, yeah, I mean, the film does look at teaching and learning, education, in various ways. I mean, Poppy is a very good teacher. The flamenco teacher you mentioned is actually a very good teacher, but hasn't learnt rule number one of teaching, which is you leave your personal emotional baggage outside the classroom.
Which leads to one of the most hilarious scenes in the film.
Thank you. I enjoy it myself. And
do you laugh at film after you've made it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even though you know what's coming?
Yes. I mean, certainly if I'm with audiences, I don't actually roar with laughter because I've already done that. But I certainly enjoy the humour. And, of course, the other teacher in the film is the driving instructor, who is, in fact, an extremely bad teacher who's got full of all sorts of talk about education and teaching but actually doesn't really understand it at all.
But she does learn how to drive.
Sure, she learns how to drive, but that's because she's bright.
Well, we've talked in the past about the unique way that you develop a film, and you've even explained it in a book called Mike Lee on Mike Lee. Do you know if any other directors work this way?
No.
And do you also write plays. Do you do the same thing when you're developing a play?
Absolutely, exactly the same.
And that is, you have some kind of idea, and then you work with the actors and you improvise and then write a script based on the improvisation?
Not really. No, actually. I mean, I work with the actors individually to create. I collude with each actor to create a character, and I put the characters together, and gradually relationships form and the whole world of the film comes into existence. And there's a great deal of research and discussion goes on, and actors go out and research things that will help them to make it three-dimensional. And my job during all that is to get it, is to get the premise of a film set up. And then we decide, you know, locations and so on. There's decisions made about how it's going to look and technical things.
So if it's in Camden Town, it means something different than if you shoot it in Chelsea?
Possibly, not necessarily. That's a different thing. I mean, that may be true, but there are all sorts of action where, you know, if you shot it in one end of London or the other, it would be the same, you know. But no, I just mean, you know, you choose locations because you have to do that for every film. But I don't go away and write a script and then bring it back. The writing happens through rehearsal with the actors. I mean, it's an actual organic, hands-on process. But what we shoot is always very precise. But as you say, we've talked about this many times.
And sometimes you've even said that you're not sure how the film is going to end.
Oh, absolutely. And this film is no exception. I had a very strong feeling of the spirit of how it should end, the nature of what should happen at the end. But the precise dynamics and specifics and location I discovered during the course of the shooting.
My guess,
I mean, it is about going out and making up a film as you go along. And that shooting period is preceded by half a year working with the actors and everybody just to develop the premise. But actually, when it comes to it, it's about making up a film as you go along. That's what it's about.
But it's not improvised in the same way, because the shots are obviously very seriously thought out.
Yes.
This film has a real rhythm to it.
Nothing is, you know, but, you know, the thing is, all art is a synthesis of improvisation and order. All artists, painters, writers, musicians, poets, sculptors, you improvise and then you take whatever you improvise and you put order on it and you work, you rework it and work it and distill it and refine it until it's the artifact. That's all I do. But it all comes out of organic improvisation.
But I would think it also comes out of doing your casting very carefully, because I'm sure that Your actors here all brought a lot to these roles, and in some cases they're people you've worked with before. In some cases, I don't think that they've done very much film.
No,
in the
absolutely.
Past. Did they come out of theater?
Yeah, sure. There are actors who've done no film. They're all experienced actors, if only in the theater. I think in this film there are 16 actors, and I've worked with 5 of them before. You know, when you talk about their contribution, that's absolutely essential and fundamental. And I really do work with actors so that they do make a major, major creative contribution, not just to the playing of the part, but to the whole conception of the thing. They're not writers. I mean, one of the things, apart from anything else, is that each actor only knows what his or her character would know. The actor has no overview of the film. So that they can be spontaneous when we're exploring things. But it's very much about, as far as I'm concerned, elevating the actor to the level of an artist, you know, and really being creative with acting.
Well, Sally Hawkins says she had no idea that she was going to be in almost every shot in this film when she started.
No, but she pretty soon spotted it, I think.
We're talking about Happy Go Lucky, Mike Lee's latest film, which is opening today at the Landmark Sunshine and the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. Should we read anything into the fact that this is the first film that you've shot widescreen?
Well, it's certainly appropriate for this film. I wanted it to burst with life, burst with color. When I reached the stage in my development process, when I shared the film, the idea of the film, the putative film that was, as it was formulating in my head at that time, with my cinematographer, Dick Pope, and with the designers, I said, you know, it needs to burst with energy, burst with life. I talked about Poppy. I talked about her positive, upbeat energy. I said it needed to be to have bright colours, and we found this new Fuji motion picture stock called Vivid, which is wonderful for primary colours, and it seemed very natural to go widescreen for the first time.
Now, when Technicolor first came along, it was very bright with primary colours, but this is a different kind of primary. This feels natural primary
colours. Yes,
colors.
I think it's a bit subtler than Technicolor.
But could you ever imagine shooting something with the kind of richness, those reds and blues that came out of the late 30s in Hollywood?
Well, I don't see the point. Not now that we have more sophisticated technology that gives us the likes of the kind of thing that enables us to shoot happy-go-lucky. I think that's, I don't know. I think it's great to be able to play on a Stradivarius, but I don't particularly want to shoot with colours that make it look like a 1930s movie. Really.
Are you ever tempted to work with digital? Because more and more directors are.
Actually, some of this film was shot digitally. In the car, the driving lesson scenes, we had these tiny digital cameras planted in the car so that we could... Because it was very important that the actors are actually driving the car, that they're not on a low load or on a trailer of some kind, that they really are driving for real. And as we're shooting... The wonderful thing about digital technology is that you can mix up film with digital and grade it so that you absolutely no one can tell the difference.
In the early days of digital, you could tell the difference.
Absolutely. It stuck out like a sore thumb, and we wouldn't have thought about doing it in a million years. But now you can do it, and it's wonderful. So, yes, I mean, we're in the 21st century, and everything's possible, and we're moving in directions. But what is significant is that, as I say, we did, in shooting in 2007, only last year, we did shoot on a brand new Fuji stock for motion pictures. Now, they wouldn't be bringing out a new film stock if it was all about to collapse. So I think... film is with us for a good long time to come, and I'm pleased.
It allows you to do different kind of editing, doesn't it?
What, digital?
No. Well, the both present different kinds of...
Oh, yes, yeah. Of course.
I mean, but I know that radio has changed now because we pretty much do everything digitally. It allows us to do certain things we couldn't do in the past. On the other hand, there's something lost with the new technologies.
Yes, I think that may be true. I mean, certainly, although we shoot on film and we have the discipline of the length of a roll of film, I mean, the fact that we can edit, it's all transferred to a digital process and you edit digitally means, of course, that you work a lot faster.
You're no longer cutting film.
You're not cutting it physically. My films used to have a little logo we designed at the end with a pair of scissors and sprocket holes, and I was, in a Luddite way, adamant that, you know, you would edit too fast and it would be anti-creative, and I think I was talking rubbish, basically, because I've since discovered that it's great. It's a great tool.
Didn't you train early on as an actor? Do you think that that has had an effect on the way you approach acting and the way you relate to actors?
Yes, I'm sure it has. I mean, I was never an actor. I never wanted to be an actor, but I certainly wanted to find out about it. And as you say, I went to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London first. That's the first thing I did when I left school for a couple of years. And
Is that like learning how to play an instrument before you compose for somebody else?
Yes, absolutely. I think precisely that. And I've you know, been with actors all my life. I was married to an actress for a quarter of a century.
Starred in many of your films.
Yeah, I mean, I think I know about it. I think I am what they call an actor's director. But hey, I'd have to be because I am the guy that has no script and gets the actors in and invites them to collaborate on a very sophisticated creative process, which is all about acting. I mean, it is all about using their acting in a creative way. So, yeah, I mean, I love actors, and I love to see what they can do, and it, to me, is a great source of joy to see them really do the kind of amazing things that, say, Sally Hawkins does in Happy Go Lucky. And I will be delighted when she wins prizes, as she already has started to do.
There was there's that famous statement by Alfred Hitchcock that actors are something like cows.
Cattle.
Every actor I've met has been, all but maybe two, have been really smart. So I didn't understand that. But perhaps, I guess this has to do with directorial philosophy. If you feel that you are the manipulator than their cattle. And if you feel that you're somebody who's sitting back and letting them...
No, I think that's, with all due respect, I think that's, not a sophisticated enough grasp of the of it all. I think you
it's
have...
It's okay, I'm very unsophisticated
generally. You have to be able to... You know, I put my hands up. For me, it is all about giving them space, seeing what happens, helping them to grow things, to see, to do unpredictable things and not pressurizing them. But it is also about manipulating them. It's also about making things happen and not just letting things happen, because we're talking about filmmaking, not just facilitating some kind of hippie sit-in where everybody just lets it all hang out, and is actually about a disciplined manufacturing of something that has a beginning and a middle and an end and makes all kinds of thematic and dramatic and narrative sense. I think, but what I suppose I'm saying is that both things are true.
Well, you mentioned earlier that your playwriting involves a similar process or the same process. So when do you know whether an idea that you've had, the germ, is going to make it as a play as opposed to a film?
It doesn't really work like that, because if I'm the first thing is, okay, we're going to make a film or we're going to do a play. And so by the time I start to develop the material, I know whether I'm making a play or I'm making a film. For example, my play 2,000 Years, which was recently staged in New York, but I did 3 years ago. I created it for the National Theatre in London. It's a play that deals with political issues. And I decided that since I was invited to do a play at the National Theatre, which is a very intelligent forum of all kinds of plays in which things are discussed, that it would be appropriate, since I knew that to explore the kind of things I wanted to would involve people sitting around talking about things, that this would actually sit very well in a play, perhaps more than a movie. So that's what I did. I mean, it was theatrical, it was heightened, it was a play, it wasn't just talk. But, you kind of, some things are right for plays and some things are right, but I make the decision because that's what I'm either doing, the play or the film.
But it sounds like you do plays when people ask you to do plays, you do movies because that's what you do.
I think that's totally right.
So I'm assuming that your next project will be a film, unless somebody stops you and says, Mike, I have some money, I want you to write a play.
No. It will be a film. No, I mean, you just make a decision that that's what you're going to do. It will be a film.
And will it be something that is like a pendulum swing again? Because you've talked so much about being optimistic and not being pessimistic anymore. Are you trapped by
No. That's this film. That's what this film deals with. I'm not talking about... I never said I'm not pessimistic anymore. I live in the 21st century. There's a great deal to be pessimistic about.
I've been reading the newspapers.
Yeah, exactly. So, there are all kinds of possibilities. The thing I want to do, which no one will give me the money to do, because it's too much, the budget will be too big, sadly, is I am desperate to make a film in the way that I made Topsy-Turvy about Gilbert and Sullivan. I'm desperate to do a movie about the great English painter J.M.W. Turner, who's just had a great
major show here at the Metropolitan Museum.
Absolutely. A great character and a great cinematic subject, and I could really do it justice. And all my comrades my cinematographer and designer that I work with, keen to do it. I mean, I'm really desperate to do it. But whereas with Topsy-Turvy, we cut all the exteriors when the budget shrank and we could get away with it because it's a film about theatre. It's an interior subject. Turner was the guy who strapped himself to the mast of a ship to paint storms. We're talking about not just exteriors, but getting out there and all sorts of also using digital things to make it interesting and visually exciting. So, you have to go to Venice and all kinds of things like that. It's prohibitive and no one wants to know.
And I'm assuming now with economic crunch, it's going to even be harder to get financing for anything other than a movie like Batman Returns again.
Absolutely.
And you're not in any way interested in doing that kind of film.
Well, I mean, even if I were, nobody else would be interested in me doing it.
But actually, it'd be interesting to see Mike Lee
do a Batman movie. I think I have my own genre, actually.
Mike Lee is the writer and director of Happy Go Lucky, his latest film, which opens today at the Landmark Sunshine and the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. And it's been a great pleasure talking to you again.